You're listening to Peter Donegan, as always, www.donneganlandscape.com. Hit the blog, it's the 15th of February. And yesterday you heard Frank Foley talk about his thoughts on roses. This is the audio that I collated that is to do with Frank's life and horticulture. An amazing, amazing, amazing guy just to sit and listen to. I think you can gather from the bit where we're sitting in the coffee shop, where there's a little bit of hustle and bustle in the background, but you can gather. I didn't ask a whole lot of questions for the first time, probably in a long, long time. I just sat back and listened in absolute awe. The second part, I suppose, is outside, where there's not as much going on in the background, but still in all. Frank, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It was an absolute honour and a pleasure to sit in your company. I'm with Frank Foley and we're in Clontarf at the edge of St. Anne's Park in Raheny, and we're in the Tiernan Old Cafe just at the Red Stables. And myself and Frank were just chatting about, I suppose everybody knows the story about how I got into gardening, but I wanted Frank's story.
So I came to Clontarf in 1953. And I got a house, and over the back wall of my garden was another man. And for the first year or so, I was very enthusiastic. In those days, builders didn't leave the ground nice and tidy when they built the house. You get all kinds of rubble everywhere, front and back gardens. Nowadays, they have it neat and tidy when you get in. So I spent the first summer digging concrete out of the front garden where they had mixed the cement for the house. The concrete blocks were actually made on the site, and there was this layer of concrete, and that had to come out. And on the back there was some of the same kind of thing. Anyway, the first year very little actual produce came about, and the second year, the third year, began to take some kind of form out. I was enthusiastic that same, and I had half the back garden. The back garden's about 70 feet long, and nearly half of that was taken up with garden. I had fruit and veg. I had black currants and white currants and strawberries and parsnips and carrots, lettuce and cabbage. And I was a real gardener then. God bless it when I think of it now. But the man over the back wall then used to come along occasionally to see what exactly I was at, and he talked me into this would be about 1956 or thereabouts. He talked me into joining the new society there, the Horticulture Society. He was one of the leading lights in it, and so I became a horticulturalist. And it was a great society at that time. There were quite a big number of people in it. It was fairly newly established. I'd say it was established around 1950. And strangely, it grew out of a meeting that I think it was the Mothers' Union in the parish hall in Seafield Road. I'm not certain of it, but I think it was the Mothers' Union was the start of it. And as a result, a lot of things in it were baking, cooking. And if you don't mind, there were two or three classes for eggs. Because this was even still a semi-rural part of Dublin. And there were great big long gardens in the place. I mean, some of the gardens along Seafield Road must have been well over 100 feet long. But people obviously kept chickens. And there were, I think, three classes for eggs. And the first one, the white eggs and brown eggs or something. Maybe, I don't think there were duck eggs. There were certainly classes for hen's eggs. And it grew and it grew. And it became then that it encompassed the whole community of Clontarf, not just the Women's Union or the Mothers' Union, rather, or any group like that. It became widespread in next to no time. And there was a great buzz around it. And that's, you know, I haven't got into that. I got even more enthusiastic, I suppose, And when things did actually grow, when I put down seeds and things, it helped to give me the enthusiasm to keep going in it. But that was it. That was my introduction to gardening. And before that, I had never had access to a garden. It went on, nothing exciting really for a long time.
Do you remember the first thing you ever grew, Frank, yourself? Do you remember the first time you ever, was it a pack of the seeds, sir?
Well, the first things I grew were very simple things. Marigolds, nasturtiums. Pansies. What else? In other words, things that were extremely easy to grow. You can hardly go wrong with the those ones.
Did you buy the seeds in a packet, well, Frank?
Yeah. I bought them in Woolworths. Now, we used to have Woolworths shops. You're too young to remember that. We used to have Woolworths here in Henry Street. And, in fact, one day in Woolworths, I met, what was it, in Percy something? There used to be on television, an English gardener. Percy. Can't remember the rest of his name. He was here promoting the seeds and that in Woolworths and Henry Street. In those days, God bless you, that's a long way back.
Do you remember how much they cost, Frank?
Oh, something like 6 months, which would be, four, say? No, 6 pence. 240. Oh, goodness, it'd be a very small number of cents anyway. And that time you got too many seeds in them, and you got a huge amount of seeds in it. But they were very simple things. But they did help to create an odd little flower bed, and bit by bit you added to it. As time went on, then you start developing your skills. I used to bud roses. Now roses, I presume are not grown on their own root. They're budded onto a rootstock, which controls the height and that of the rose bush. And you get, well, the big growers get, I think it's Rosa canina, the dog rose type of root, and they bud them onto that. Now, you know what I mean by budding? Mm. You take the little bud from an existing rose, you put it onto the stem of the dog rose, and hopefully it works. Mm. But I was quite successful doing that. Not for myself, I did it for other people. I got in on it. Leslie Mitchell, my gardener over the back wall, or his back wall, whichever way you want to put it, he used to do some of it, and he got me in on it, and I used to do it for some other people in the society at that time. But that's the only thing I've tried to do that was anyway difficult or advanced, shall we say.
Yeah.
But it worked, and I got reasonably good results with it. But I would have great sympathy for the fools in places now like Dixon's Garden in Northern Ireland, where there are hundreds and hundreds of roses to be budded, and there must be a whale of a job bent down over them, coming down through acres of these. Just one good way of propagating roses, if you, coming back again to the rose, the flower shows, somebody would buy in a couple of new roses, and they would be ones that sort of the fashion of the time would be, you'd have to get this rose. And they'd get that, and they'd get a couple of the briar roots, and for their one bush, they could easily make half a dozen. You can make an awful lot more, but they could easily make half a dozen. And they wouldn't have room for more than half a dozen of each rose that they'd have growing anyway. Unless they were huge, they'd have a country field. But it's interesting. That's the only thing, I suppose, that I've ever grown other than by seed or then it got into cuttings, of course, and I think it was cuttings of croissants, which was an interesting exercise. Chrysanthemum roots, you can keep them from year to year. And what I did was, when I dig a plant up in the autumn, wash the root, wash all the soil out of it, dip it in a bucket with a light mix of Jay's fluid in it. And that would do two things. It certainly killed off any bugs that were in it. But it was amazing how it improved the number of shoots you got for next season. I was always amazed at it. But you had to wash off all the soil. And you'd have to keep it in, kept in peat moss, because we put nearly everything in peat moss in those days over the winter, and keep it out. Couldn't have it out in the open, really, because you got snow and ice on top of it. I don't think it would do it any good. But it was a great way of propagating stuff.
Can I ask you briefly, Frank, on the Clontarf Gardening Society?
Yeah.
Do you remember your first meeting there, or were you involved in the...
My first meeting, I was a stranger. The others were all people who knew each other. And I came in, the only one that I knew or that knew me was Leslie Mitchell, the man over my back wall. But I'd be a stranger to all the others. But you're only a stranger for one meeting. After that, everybody knew you, and that was the end of it. Eventually, I was on the committee of the Horticultural Society. We called it the Horticultural at that time. Now it's the Garden Society. But I was on the committee of that for quite a while. Yeah, that was okay. I didn't mind that.
Do you think it's changed over the year, Frank?
It has. It has. There's the great exhibitors we had have all passed off. And they're not replaced by people now. Well, if you want to be a good exhibitor, you had to give a lot of time to your plants. And there was a fair number of people in those early days who gave the time, not just to roses, though it was probably mainly a rose society at the time. But they did other flowers and other things as well. But they put in the time. Now, they were dedicated to it almost. Some of these people, I think, never took holidays because flowers were what mattered through the whole summer. But, you know, fine being enthusiastic, but it must have been pretty awful for the family. No, I never got that involved in it.
I'm laughing with you here, Frank, not at you.
I never got that involved in it.
Do you still go down to the society, Frank?
I do, yeah. But I'm not in the committee or anything now for years. I've left that to more active people. But there are a number of societies around, and I think I told you about Christopher White, who was out in Balbriggan, he is, I think. He has a society out there that's doing very well. It's much newer than Clontarf, but it was very, very active, and attracted a lot of support from Northern Ireland. Christopher used to exhibit up there, and they came down then to support his show. And it made a big difference to them. They had very, very good shows. Ours has got much smaller, much more manageable now.
What advice, Frank, would you give to anyone who was thinking about, I suppose, young and thinking about getting into gardening? And I suppose, is there an advantage in that sense to joining gardening or horticultural society?
There is, because every meeting of the society is actually a lecture or a slideshow or something or another. It's not just a sitting around chatting about what I did in my garden or you did in your garden. It's somebody telling us how to do the thing properly. And you will learn an awful lot from it. You'll learn a lot more if you'd ask some questions at the end of the session, which people are kind of reluctant to do. But in fact, the speakers would like to be asked the questions, I find, generally. At least they feel that, the way I look at this, that they like to know that people were listening to them and wanted to develop some thought further to get to ask more and more about some specific point. And that makes it more interesting to the speaker and would help others. But people should be encouraged to ask questions. And by doing that, you learn something every time. Yeah. The main thing is, don't be too ambitious to start off with. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. It's nice to be ambitious and, you know, I would let them down gently, but there's not much point in trying to grow the absolutely best whatever it is in the world until you know how to start growing it anyway. I think people have to start with something comparatively simple, and that might be not so much growing things from seed in some cases, because not everybody has a big garden nowadays. It could be getting a plant and keeping the plant alive for 12 months or 6 months or whatever. That might be how they start. And in fact, they might, when it's said they're growing plants, they might never have a garden, but they might have a patio or someplace where they grow things in pots.
Mm.
Now you can grow all kinds of things in pots. You can now get tomatoes that were grown like you grow hanging baskets. You get tomato or strawberry plants that will grow in a barrel. You know, there are things that can be grown that certainly the better you grow them, the better they'll turn out. And you can give them a bit of care and attention. It gives you a good result in a comparatively short time.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that helps, I think, if it doesn't take too long for the thing to flower. Even flowers that were biennials, that is, you put the seed down this year, but flowers next year. Some of those, like Sweet William, for instance, they now have seeds that will grow and flower in the 1 year. And that's a bit better than having to put down these seeds and wait a year and a half before you have flowers.
Yeah.
That can be a bit discouraging, to say the least of it.
Yeah.
But don't expect too much from it. If something doesn't work for you, well, it may have been the weather was part of the reason for it. Try it again, it might work the next time. Don't be too ambitious. And talk to somebody who is growing if you can. And ask what would grow in my garden if you knew somebody's garden. And ask him what he grows in his. Then you find out that should grow in my garden too. Provided, of course, that it's treated well. That you don't go off on holidays for a month in summer and leave the thing scorched. Get somebody to come in, you know, now and again and throw a bucket of water on it. But they can, you know, if you take it too seriously, it can interfere with things like family holidays. And there's no future in that, you know. Absolutely none in that.